and welcome to Mind Matters, the podcast featuring experts and advocates in the mental health and substance use field across Central Florida. Today, we are talking about narcissism and giving you some signs and symptoms to take a look at. And we're talking with Renee Cherowitz, who I'm going to introduce you to in just a minute. My name is Wendy McCarty, and I'm so happy to be your host today. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, also a healthcare liaison, as well as an advocate at heart. Today's podcast is brought to you by La Amistad Behavioral Health, University Behavioral Center, Palm Point Behavioral, and Central Florida Behavioral. We provide a full continuum of mental health and substance use care, including outpatient, acute, and residential levels of care for youth and adults across Central Florida. Hi, Renee. It's so nice to have you.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome. This is Renee Cherowitz, and she has a private practice here in Central Florida. She specializes in complex trauma, PTSD, attachment disorder, victims of narcissistic abuse, which we're going to talk a little bit about today. And she also runs some group therapy as well. So welcome. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you, Wendy. It's a pleasure to be here.
You ready just to jump in here?
Absolutely. Let's go.
All right, let's do it. So we're going to start off by talking a little bit about narcissism.
Yes.
So what is narcissism? I know we hear a lot about it in the news and articles. It's kind of been a buzzword. Can you tell us a little bit more from a clinical point of view what it is?
Absolutely. Well, we all have narcissism, which is the healthy narcissism. Like, I'm doing a great job, or I can give a speech and feel good about it, you know, in front of, you know, thousands of people. So that is a healthy narcissism. And then the different types of narcissism that a lot of people are noticing probably more so is like the malignant narcissist and the different types, where that is more of a clinical diagnosis. And
can you explain that a little bit? What's malignant narcissism?
Sure. Well, there's different types of narcissism. What you'll see in, like, in the DSM is our therapeutic Bible, so to speak, with all the different codes and diagnoses, where it's a personality disorder. And personality disorders have a genetic component as well as the environmental component. So if you have the genetics, but without the environmental component, you may or may not have the personality disorder per se. So with the different types, the usual types of people talk about what you're referring to is probably the grandiose narcissism. Okay. Like, I'm the best, I'm boastful, I'm very entitled, and fight like the rooster, so to speak.
Okay.
And they're better than everybody else. And image is extremely important for that person. And then you get the other types, the malignant, and that one is one of the ones that is the most, I don't want to say scary, but the one you really watch out for, because they have malignant narcissists, they have no empathy, and they're going to get their way, and it's about winning at whatever cost.
Okay. Okay.
And you can get some sociopathic behavior in with a malignant narcissist, which is the lack of empathy, as well as I don't feel bad. You hurt me, I'm going to hurt you double. That's your negative.
That is scary stuff.
Uh-huh. And then you have covert narcissism, and you may see that in people like, oh my gosh, you're so wonderful in the community. They do all these wonderful things, and the image is, they're on this pedestal. They're always giving. They're the nicest people, but then at home, they treat their families terribly. So it's the image that they're projecting. You may even see that in different types of religious communities, where they're getting all the attention. They're on the spotlight. That kind of type of situation. And then you have what is the other one that I'm thinking? You got the grandiose, you got the malignant, and I say covert. Yep, I said covert.
We talk about covert a little bit.
Yeah, covert. And then communal is another one. That's a relatively new term. Communal.
Ooh. Yeah, tell us about that.
Like, more of the social aspect of it, where, okay, Wendy, I really love this foundation that you have, and I am going to give you $1 million. and I want to see my face all over the newspapers, and I'm going to be put on a pedestal because I did this, but I'm only doing it for the praise and to make myself good.
And so the motive is not altruistic.
Correct. It's okay. About being seen and what a wonderful person I am, because they cannot do that for themselves. They need to have it given to them in that respect. Okay. And so people have this really big image that they're something that they're really not.
Ah, okay. Okay. And I like what you said too about a spectrum, that it sounds like, you know, you can have a healthy dose of narcissism.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, like, do I meet this criteria or not? But there Absolutely. Is a spectrum of narcissism.
Yes. Yes. And just because somebody may say, oh, they're a narcissist, we cannot diagnose officially until that person is sitting in front of us. So even if somebody may be a victim of narcissistic abuse sitting in front of me, I can't say to that person, yes, they're a narcissist. I will say, it sounds like they have characteristics.
Okay.
Ethically, I cannot say that because that is a big no-no.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So you brought up the victims of narcissism. I want to talk just a little bit about that. What are maybe some signs, everyday signs, that you may be dealing with someone who's a narcissist and you may be a victim yourself?
Absolutely. So it is, that is also a spectrum as well when it comes to the victimization, because it usually starts slow. And how that starts is, oh my gosh. So when a person comes in that shows characteristics of victim of narcissistic abuse, you're looking at a person who has trauma. And the trauma is pretty common symptoms just in general across the board. But with these individuals, it's a process. So when a person is in a relationship, I'll speak about the partner relationship aspect romantically, it does not come on really strong as in the negative. Otherwise, they want to be in a relationship with them right off the bat if they're treating them terribly. So the love bombing is what happens typically. You are the love of my life. I've never met anyone like you. I'm marrying you. They put them on that pedestal. Everything is wonderful. And then slowly, it starts to deteriorate by maybe not giving as much attention. They may be nitpicking and criticizing at the person. Maybe they give them the silent treatment. Maybe they do gaslighting, which is a terminology, an older terminology that means they're telling the person that they're with, the narcissist tells the person that they're with, I never said that, when in actuality they did. And to the point where the victim feels like they're going crazy, like, did I say that?
Sure.
They doubt themselves.
Yeah.
And it just continues and it continues. It feels like you're almost like, I'm paranoid now because I can't trust myself. Yeah. So
I can see how that would just feel like a loop, you know, absolutely. You go from the top of the world, this person is amazing, to all of a sudden, this isn't quite the person I thought they were. Is what's happening here?
Yep. And so when in the beginning, what's happening with the initial stage of the love bombing is they have that trauma bonding. So you have the love, that feeling with the oxytocin and the dopamine, right? When you fall in love, it feels good.
Right.
And so it can get addicting. So then when it's not there, it's like, oh, I lost. I want to get that feeling back again. And so I'm going to do whatever I can do to get it there, because they showed me that this is who they are. Wow. And so that belief that keeps them coming back. But it can also be like an addiction. People often say, I feel like I'm addicted to the person. That's actually the hormones, the oxytocin and the dopamine. So it's the reward center of the brain that's affected.
I've heard too, like narcissists will play off that. They can kind of see that the person is low, they're feeling bad about the relationship, and then hit them with that. I think you called it a love bomb, where they flood the dopamine and all the good stuff, and then come right back around and you see the mistreatment and the abuse. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. And so like, then they'll do what's called the devaluation stage, where you're not on the pedestal anymore. You are down. And that's so the victim keeps wanting to come back up. And then when they feel like, oh, the victim is pulling away from me, let me do some breadcrumbing to them so that'll keep them on the hook, right?
Yeah.
Because they need that person, that victim, for filling their egos because they cannot do it themselves. They need that energy supply from others.
Is there some low self-esteem underneath that with the narcissist? I know you said a genetic component, but yes, also that environmental component. Is that what it is underneath all of that?
Absolutely. Their egos are so fragile because they will not show their vulnerability because they are so fragile, and you cannot say, hey, you really hurt me. Oh, how dare you? And then they'll project and they'll turn it back around. Yes, the ego is very fragile. And then they can even have little temper tantrums like they're 2 or 3 years old because of if they're ever faced with something they may have done, they can't accept it. And you will not see them being vulnerable because then you'll see the true self. And if you see that true self of who they are, they'll pretty much immediately come up and block it once again, because now that's too dangerous for them.
So when you're working with someone who's a victim of narcissism abuse, can we talk a little bit about what trauma bonding is and what does that look like? How do you work with someone who has trauma bonding?
Yes. So it's the whole oxytocin dopamine thing. And the first thing I provide to a client is the psychoeducation. I tell them, number one, they are believed because they're often feeling shame and embarrassment and being judged by other people, because people close to them are saying, you know, why don't you leave them? They're treating you terribly. And they're like, yeah, I know logically, but I keep going back. Why am I keep going back to the person? And that's the whole reward system, right? And so that's really important that they understand that it is a physiological issue, not just the emotional. That's the biggest part of it, and the different types of signs and symptoms of that. A lot of times people don't feel like they will be believed because this thing sounds so unbelievable that these things are happening. And people will doubt them. So it's very important, whoever works with them as a therapist, believe them, no matter how crazy it may sound.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes total sense. So if we were to ask, if you could give us 1 to 2 tips or just little strategies in our everyday lives, if this is something that is hitting home for us and we think this might be a situation we're in, like what would you say?
The biggest one is self-care and that radical acceptance of understanding they are not going to change. They are who they are. They may change some behaviors, but ultimately you can't get empathy back. You can't get it. I mean, it's just, if it's not there, it's not there. So if you're in a situation where you can't necessarily leave a relationship, having that understanding that they're who they are, and then focusing on myself, not them. So having that support system, ensuring I'm having a healthy diet and exercise for my mental and physical well-being, and having a support group, getting into therapy to feel extra support, and then understanding and validation. So those are the big tips right there.
Those are great tips.
Thank you.
Just a couple questions about yourself as a therapist. What are you excited about right now?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
And it can be anything, your personal, your therapeutics, like anything that you're thinking of. What are you excited about right now?
Actually, one of the biggest things, I'm going to do a little plug here. One of my clients, she gave me permission. She wrote a book.
Oh, that's awesome.
On her experiences. And so I was part of helping her with that and supplementing information. So that's very exciting. That's, we're talking about book number 2. Exciting.
I love that. That's amazing. Aww.
And then also having a second victim support group for narcissistic abuse coming in the near future. We don't have a date set for that. I'm very passionate about ensuring that these victims are heard and supported and validated.
I'm so lucky that one, your clients have you. And thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. You gave some wonderful tips. If you're someone listening today and you feel like you're in a situation where you may need some individual help, you can reach Renee Cherowitz at RC Counseling. If you feel like you may need some help in an inpatient setting or intensive outpatient through our hospital system, you can check us out on the web, either at University Behavioral Center, La Amistad Behavioral, Palm Point Behavioral, or Central Florida Behavioral. Thank you so much for being with us today, Renee. We really, really appreciate it. This was just wonderful information for all of us to learn. And we really thank you for joining us today.
It was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Wendy.
All right. Thanks for listening, y'all. We'll see you next time.